We're going to start with our text this morning found in Genesis chapter 4. Genesis chapter 4. Now the man had relations with his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain, and she said, "I have gotten a man-child with the help of the Lord." Again she gave birth to his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of flocks, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. So it came about in the course of time that Cain brought an offering to the Lord of the fruit of the ground. Abel on his part also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and for his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So Cain became very angry, and his countenance fell. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must master it." Cain told Abel his brother, and it came about when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel your brother?" And he said, "I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?" He said, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. Now you are cursed from the ground which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you cultivate the ground, it will no longer yield its strength to you. You will be a vagrant and a wanderer on the earth." Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is too great to bear. Behold, you have driven me this day from the face of the ground, and from your face I will be hidden, and I will be a vagrant and a wanderer on the earth. And whoever finds me will kill me." So the Lord said to him, "Therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance will be taken on him sevenfold." And the Lord appointed a sign for Cain so that no one finding him would slay him. Then Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Cain had relations with his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to Enoch. And he built a city and called the name of the city Enoch, after the name of his son. Now to Enoch was born Irad, and Irad became the father of Mehujael. And Mehujael became the father of Methusael, and Methusael became the father of Lamech. Lamech took to himself two wives. The name of the one was Ada, and the name of the other Zillah. Ada gave birth to Jabal, who was a father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all those who play the lyre and pipe. As for Zillah, she gave birth to Tubal-Cain, the forger of all implements of bronze and iron, and the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. Lamech said to his wives, "Ada and Zillah, listen to my voice. You wives of Lamech, give heed to my speech, for I have killed a man for wounding me and a boy for striking me. If Cain is avenged sevenfold, then Lamech 77-fold. Adam had relations with his wife again, and she gave birth to a son and named him Seth. For she said, "God hath appointed me another offspring in place of Abel, for Abel killed him." To Seth, to him also a son was born, and he called his name Enosh. Then men began to call upon the name of the Lord. A month ago on Communion Sundays, we looked at the fall of humankind, and we saw the beginning of the descent of man. 2 weeks ago in Romans, it's amazing how these texts are dovetailing. In Romans, we saw that humankind exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God for corruptible men and for images of fowl and animals, and then finally the creeping things, the reptiles. Next week in Romans, we'll be seeing that they exchanged the truth of God for not a lie, but the lie, when they worshiped the creature instead of the creator. So what was Satan's temptation to Eve in the garden? That if you eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall be like God. You shall be like God. What was our relationship, our proper relationship to God? That he was a provider of everything, including our righteousness, our goodness, our life, our breath, our food, and that we were in response to commune with him and to worship him And with the lie, the worship was transferred from him to self. We worship the creature instead of the creator. Now we see the effects of the fall on the first family, and it's a very sad story. The effects of the fall, not on only the first family, but on every family who has lived since then, on our own families. Now the man had relations with his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to a son, gave birth to Cain, and she said, I have gotten a man-child with the help of the Lord. Just earlier, when God was pronouncing the curse upon each of Adam and Eve and the serpent, to Eve he said these words, and I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between your seed and her seed. He shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel. So there is this promise coming that one day Eve's seed would bruise Satan, and now she has a seed, and it's Cain, and you can imagine her thinking, this is the one who's going to bruise Satan's head. How sad the story is, because it could be no further from the truth. It's exactly opposite of what she may be thinking. And notice she says, I've gotten a man-child with the help of the Lord. That would suggest that she understands that the Lord is in this, and so that person who will bruise Satan's head is already present. Again, she gave birth to his brother Abel, and Abel was a keeper of flocks, and Cain was a tiller of the ground. It's interesting. I don't want to make too much out of this yet, but Abel was a keeper of flocks, and Cain was a tiller of the ground. What do we know about the ground from chapter 3, tilling the ground? It was cursed. And what do we know about being a keeper of flocks? What do we see in chapter 3 about animals, about flocks? You see one thing, one small little verse pops out. Do you remember what it was? Their covering. God had killed the first animals to cover them, to cover over their nakedness. That's just background. I'm not sure that the text is saying anything other than he was a farmer and Abel was a herder. A shepherd. So it came about in the course of time that Cain brought an offering to the Lord of the fruit of the ground. Again, there's this strange thing that he brings the fruit of that which is cursed, right? In chapter 3, verse 17 through 19, it says, then to Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying you shall not eat from it, cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life, both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow you will eat bread till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. So the curse was that you will have to work hard, you will toil and slave, you will grow food by the sweat of your brow, and Cain takes of that fruit, the fruit of that which was cursed, and he brings it to the Lord. Is that significant? Later on we know that they had grain offerings, but let's see what happens. Abel on his part brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat portions, and the Lord had regard for Abel and for his offering. He liked Abel's offering. He didn't like Cain's offering. What was the difference? Well, one difference was what they brought. Abel brought the product of that which was cursed. Cain did. Cain brought that which was cursed. Abel brought the firstlings from his flock, the best. The firstlings were the firstborn, the choice ones. And of the fat portions, so he brought the best. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering. I think about why does God like Abel's offering and he doesn't like Cain's offering? Some people think that it's merely because Abel had faith and Cain didn't have faith. That's in Hebrews. We'll get there in a minute. But I think something else is going on here. Cain did it out of obligation. If you get that text, what was it? What was the curse? That you will toil and you will work hard. So he had already toiled. We know that to have produced that gift, that he had worked very hard to grow that food. And he had, by the sweat of his brow, slaved to bring this offering to God. And so who's the focus on? His work and what he gave an offering. What did Abel have to do to bring these firstlings into being? Not much, right? And he brings the best. And it's, I think in that is a picture, because earlier when Adam and Eve find themselves naked, and what do? They cover themselves with fig leaves, and along comes God walking in the cool of the garden, and he asks, "Where are you?" And Adam says, "I heard the sound of you in the garden and was afraid because I was naked, so I hid myself." And he said to him, "Who told you you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree which I commanded you?" And then later on we find that God made garments of skin for Adam and his wife. First animals killed were to cover over the nakedness of Adam and Eve. And now we have this idea of being covered over. And I think there is a type, a shadow of what's to come. That there will be a sacrifice one day made that will cover over our nakedness, over our shame, over our sin. And so I think Abel, in taking the part of bringing the firstlings of the flock, the fat portions, he's recognizing that what matters is not what he brings to the Lord, but what God will do through a blood sacrifice. He's looking to what God can cover, not the work that he can bring. But Cain and his offering, he had no regard. So Cain became very angry and his countenance fell. In Hebrews 11:4, we read this morning. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous. He offered a better sacrifice through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous. So we know that sacrifice is better, but how did he bring it? By faith, Abel offered a better sacrifice. My question to you is, what did he have faith in? Was it just kind of blind faith in God? Or was it faith in the promise that one day God will take care of this? In Hebrews, at the very end of the chapter, we read these words too. And all these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from them, from us, they would not be made perfect. What's that something better that we have? Christ. So what was Abel, in his limited understanding, what was he putting his hope in? Abel was putting his hope in the coming of the sacrifice, the coming of the covering that God would provide. What was Cain putting his hope in? His hard work, the sweat of his brow, that God would be pleased with it. And now we see Cain's descent. He's angry. He's jealous. He's envious. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen?" You could see it written on his face. "If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must master it. Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up?" How will Cain be able to do well? What does he have to do well? He has to back away from the work of his hands and back up to realize that the sacrifice that matters is what God does for us, how he can cover our sin and not how we can cover our own sin. That's the doing well. And it goes on, it says, "And if you do not do well, if you don't go back, sin is crouching at your door and its desire is for you, and you must master it." I hear that, and I hear, just have the willpower to overcome your sin, Cain. But that's not what it's saying, because it's saying go back. Go back away from the work of your own hands, and go back to God being God. Because what is Cain believing? He is believing the lie of lies, that he can He can bring something that's worthy to the Lord, that his work is acceptable, that his righteousness is good enough, that his effort is good enough. Let me ask you, can evil overcome evil? Let me ask you this, can a corrupt Congress clean up a corrupt Congress? Doesn't work, does it? They just get more corrupt. And I'm saying both sides of the aisle, so I'm not stepping on everybody's toes here. Anybody's toes, maybe all of your toes. How can corrupt man, corrupt woman, how can we redeem ourselves or improve ourselves? Because in the improvement is the corrupt motive. Man, if you saw how good I was this week. Whew, right? Is that what we do? In Ecclesiastes 8:8, we read, "No man has authority to restrain the wind with the wind, or authority over the day of death, and there is no discharge in the time of war." And then this phrase, "And evil will not deliver those who practice it." Evil can never deliver evil. And so Cain is looking to evil to deliver himself. He wants to master it by his own power, and the only way to master it is to go back, get on the other side of the lie, that he can be as God, that he is captain of his fate, that he is master of his future, and he has to go back and go back to where he realizes that he is just a creature, that he does not have what it takes, and that if he is to master sin, God is going to have to master sin on his behalf. Do you see that? If you don't believe me, try it. Master sin this week on your own strength. I've tried many times, and I've failed many times. Cain told his brother Abel, he told about this conversation with God. We don't know what he told him, but he told him something. And it came about when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and killed him. I think about Eve in this story. She who had taken of the fruit and introduced this twist into the family now sees the result of her own sin being played out in the life of her two sons. One kills the other, and her heart must have been broken. Don't we see that as parents? One of the hardest things about being parents is seeing your own sin being lived out in your children. If you want to know how selfish you are, get married. If you really want to know how selfish you are, have children. Is that true of all of us here? We've all believed the lie that I am God, you're not. It's all about me. All of you orbit around my life. Thank God that's not true. First John tells us, "For this is a message which you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, not as Cain, who was of the evil one and slew his brother." He was of the evil one and slew his brother. God had said that sin is crouching at your door. Who is that being crouching at his door? Satan. And he was of Satan and he slew his brother. He bought into the lie that I can master sin. Every time you try to change your life for the better, I'm going to do this for you, Lord. I'm going to change. I'm not going to sin anymore. I promise I'll never do that again. Who are you looking to do that? Self. I had some behavior drawn to my attention this week that's painful for me to look at. And my tendency is to want to say, okay, I'm gonna not do that anymore. I can't do that. I know if I try, what will I do? I'll do the very thing I do not want to do. Oh, wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this bondage and this body of death? But thanks be to God for our Lord Jesus Christ. So I come to him and say, humbly, change me, Lord. In Isaiah, we read these words, and I'd ask you to turn there. It's a little bit longer passage. Isaiah 64. Isaiah 64, starting with verse 5. You meet him who rejoices in doing righteousness. And it sounds like my doing the righteousness, but look what it says next. Who remembers you in your ways. So what is doing righteousness here? Remembering God in his ways. Behold, you were angry, for we sinned. We continued in them a long time. And shall we be saved? For all of us have become like one who is unclean. And all of our righteous deeds are like a filthy garment. Like, literally, it says, like menstrual rags. And all of us wither like a leaf, and our iniquities, like the wind, have taken us away. Is it true of Cain? Is it true of Abel? True of both of them, right? True of all of us, every one of us sitting here. There is no one who calls on your name, who arouses himself to take hold of you. For you have hidden your face from us and have delivered us into the power of our iniquities. What happened to Cain? He didn't look to God, he looked to himself, and so God delivered him into the power of his iniquities. This twist that is passed down through our families. But now, O Lord, you are our Father, we are the clay and you are the potter. Do you hear the change? Are you the potter? Are you the one who shapes your life? No, he's remembering in my sin, even in the state of my iniquity, this sin that's been passed on and the sin that I'm responsible for myself. I'm responsible for all of it, but there's sin that's passed on to you from your parents, and there's sins that you have gotten to on your own, and you carry both of those. And in the recognition of that sin, where do we turn? We turn to the potter, and we say, you are the potter, we are the clay. What matters is what you do with your hands, what you shape. So we come as lumps of clay, lumps of dirt. Isn't that what we were made from? And we get put in the potter's hands. And he works into us. He kneads into us a brand new life. Not one based out of our sin, but one based out of his goodness and mercy and grace. Do not be angry beyond measure, O Lord, nor remember iniquity forever. Behold, look now, all of us are your people. Do your good work. Do you hear the Isaiah inviting the potter to come and shape his life? What did Cain do? Did he invite the potter to come and shape his life? No, he chose against the counsel of God to try to master his sin on his own instead of going back to the other side of the line, realizing that he couldn't do it. Then the Lord said to Cain, where is Abel, your brother? And he said, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? And now we have the grand fall beginning. Adam and Eve, when they were confronted with a very similar question, where are you? They actually say, what have you done? He asks Adam, what have you done? What did Adam do? It was Eve. It wasn't me, it was Eve. Eve goes, wasn't me, it was that stupid snake. Blame shifting. Aren't we good at this in our marriages and in our relationships? I don't care if it's at work, with children. We blame shift. It was her fault. It was his fault. But Cain goes a step further. He doesn't blame anybody. He just flat out lies. I don't know. Wait a minute. Does he know where Abel is? Yeah, because he killed him. And he goes a step further, this descent of Cain. He goes a step further and he says, am I my brother's keeper? He challenges God. What right do you have to ask me about my brother? It's not my business. When in reality, it was very much his business because by his hand, he had killed his brother. Now we have the descent from Not taking responsibility and shifting it onto somebody else, to just flat out lying to God, to then challenging God, what business is it of yours? And what is Cain making himself out to be? God. Does he not know that God sees all things, that you cannot hide from God? What is God asking Cain? Where is Abel, your brother? Why does he ask him the question? Doesn't he know? He's inviting something out of Cain. What is it? He's inviting some honesty to say, to tell it like it is. I killed him. I got angry and I killed him. What do you think would have happened if Cain had been able to be honest and said, if you confess your sins, God is faithful and just to forgive us our sins? That's in light of the cross, but certainly in the hope of what was to come, it applied to them equally well. If Cain had admitted it, that if he had told it like it was, there was mercy ahead. So he lies. He said to him, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. Now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand." Now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. Where did we start with Adam and Eve? They started in the Garden of Eden. In a garden that they were to cultivate, they didn't have to grow anything. They just cultivated it and took of the fruit freely and ate of any tree of the garden save one. From there, they fell to being kicked out of the Garden of Eden and having the ground cursed. It would no longer grow things profusely. It would now only grow things by the sweat of your brow and by toil. The thistle was born. The thorn was born. But now, so we have in the garden all the food you can eat for free. Now you have the sweat of your brow and toil and hardship. And now even the ground is cursed for Cain. And he falls to what? Being an exile, being a vagrant and a wanderer. He becomes the first homeless person. He becomes a person who has no, even the ground won't provide food for him. He will try to grow things and it will not grow. So he's left to be a beggar and a vagabond. What a sad story. Is that the story of the human race? That we have become aliens, that we no longer know our own country, that we no longer have a home. Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is too great to bear. Behold, you have driven me this day from the face of the ground, and from your face I will be hidden, and I will be a vagrant and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." So the Lord said to him, "Therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance will be taken on him sevenfold." And the Lord appointed a sign for Cain so that no one finding him will slay him. So even in this is mercy. He says, death isn't going to catch up with you yet. I'm going to give you mercy. Then Cain went out from the presence of the Lord. What sad words. Hear those words. Then Cain went out from the presence of the Lord. When we choose our own path, when we choose to believe the lie that I can be God, that I can be master of my sin, that I can be righteousness of my own making, where does it end up leading me? It leads me away from the presence of the Lord. Because you're left only with yourself. And again, we have the descent of Cain. In the garden, you had God coming, walking in the cool of the garden to commune with them. You see God talking to Adam and Eve in chapter 2, having them name the animals, carrying on relationship. From there, they get cast out of the garden, but apparently they still could get near the presence of the Lord. Maybe it's thought at the Garden of Eden, where the cherubim was and the sword was, that rotating sword and the cherubim, the angels, to protect the entrance to the garden. It's thought that they still had access to the presence of the Lord at that place. But now they are outcasts and they have to go. Cain has to leave the presence of the Lord. And he goes out and now the movement is complete. He's an alien from God. He has no longer his presence. And again, do we see a picture of the human race? You go out into this world, into this community, and you will see people who have been on this same journey, who went from truth to doubt, to lying to God, to challenging God. Why do you have the right? We see the same journey. People who started off in a good place, and from their choosing, they ended up... We see a whole country now who know nothing about the presence of the Lord. Do you see that descent? Cain had relations with his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to Enoch, and he built a city. Why do you build cities in that day? What was a city? Protection. You had to build walls around your city. So this is the first city, and who is it built by? Cain or Enoch, one of the two. It was Cain. He named the city after his son. So Cain goes out and he erects walls around him to protect himself from those who would seek vengeance. And now we have the beginning of war and that hatred and the lack of peace, right, between peoples and between family. He's afraid. Does he trust God that no one will kill him? So who is he trusting? He's still trusting self. I'm going to build walls and protect myself. And we've been building walls ever since. Think of the Great Wall of China. Think of the Berlin Wall. Think of the wall that Israel is now trying to erect. Think of the walls that we want to build in our own society. Now to Enoch was born Irad, and Irad became the father of Mehujael. That's how it's pronounced, Mehujael. You know, when I have a talking dictionary, I can click on the word and it pronounces it for me. So I said this about 30 times this morning, Mehujael, Mehujael, Mehujael. And do I get it right? No. And Mehujael became the father of Methusael, and Methusael became the father of Lamech. Does it matter? The point is, when you read these, just sound like you know how you're pronouncing it, and you'll do well. Go with confidence. I don't know, have any clue, but I'll make it sound good. Lamech took to himself two wives. First instance of polygamy mentioned in the Bible. What had God said? A man shall leave his father and mother's house and join to his wife, cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. And now Lamech says, I'm going to go beyond God's ordinance, and I'm going to do the good thing and have two wives. Ada's name means adorned, with the idea of being beautiful. Zillah's name means shade, probably to do with her dark hair, that she was a place of shade for him. And so the point of both of their names are that they were very, very beautiful women. So he chooses beauty. Is that wrong? No, but sometimes it isn't what it's stacked up to be, is it? Ada gave birth to Jabal, and he was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. His brother's name was Jubal, and he was the father of those who play the lyre and pipe. As for Zillah, she also gave birth to Tubal-Cain, the forger of all implements in bronze and iron. And the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah. Lamech said to his wives, Ada and Zillah, listen to my voice. Listen to my voice. You wives of Lamech, give heed to my speech. For I have killed a man for wounding me. And a boy for striking me. Is it two or one? I don't know. I think it's just one, but he's proud about the fact that he defended himself and killed somebody. And he's bragging to his wife. And then look at what he says. He pronounces his own curse. He says, if Cain is avenged sevenfold, then Lamech 77-fold. Wait a minute, I thought that was God's job. And now he is becoming God to himself. He trusts in himself to build a city. He goes beyond God's ordinance and takes two wives. And he builds, and he pronounces his own curse. Adam had relations with his wife again, and she gave birth to a son and named him Seth. For she said, God has appointed to me another offspring in place of Abel, for Cain killed him. To Seth, to him also a son was born, and he called his name Enosh. Then men began to call on the name of the Lord. With Seth, this new line, Cain's descendants were not calling on the name of the Lord. With Seth, there was a return. A return from the focus on self and me as God to calling on God's name, calling on the name of the Lord. Be gracious to us. So what do you see in this chapter? You see the descent of Cain, believing the lie that he is God, and as a result, he's completely alienated from the product of his hands, from the provision that God would have, from his home. He becomes a vagrant and wanderer, and he's driven from the very presence of God. Isn't that sort of a description of hell? All provision from God removed. No longer in our true home, heaven, and no longer in the presence of God. And what's the key? To go back and to remember that God is God, that I'm not God and you're not God, and that when we try to be God, we fail every time. When I try to be righteous of my own making, when I try to do good, when I try to change myself, when I try out of my flesh to do anything, it always corrupts. And so I come to God. We come to God. Right now, a lump of clay, a lump of dirt. And what do we say? You be the potter. Do you get to choose what you're shaped into? It's the hardest thing in our life because we want to be master of our fate. And God says, you can't have it that way. Put yourself in my hands and let me fashion you into what you will be. I vowed I'd never be a minister. And I vowed I'd never be a missionary because I saw what my father went through. No, Lord. I'm going to make my own way. And God said, okay, I'm going to let you experience fully the lumpness of your clay, the dirt, that you are but dirt. And he brought me to a point where here I am. Take me. Mold me as you will. I want that to be your prayer today. Not to look at things through your flesh, through the eyes of your wisdom and your insight, but understanding that he is the potter and we are the clay. Amen.